You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode 46.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
This episode of Mentoring Developers is dedicated to all the wonderful listeners, the community of listeners of Mentoring Developers, and all of your struggles and all of your triumphs. I really enjoy making these episodes. It's a lot of fun talking to developers, mentors, and everybody associated in this industry. We really are trying to make this industry a welcoming and easy place for you guys to get started in and to thrive in. And I think it's better for everybody. It's a win-win-win situation. So some of you have emailed me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Some of you have joined my email list at mentoringdevelopers.com/list, where they have gone through the 5 Steps to Success email course, which is great. And I think I'll be sharing a lot of good tips and tricks in future emails that I'll be sending out. So go ahead and join it if you're interested in expanding your career and being successful. I think it's what we all want, and together I think we can make it happen. We just need to have empathy, and this is a point that I like to emphasize in all of my episodes. So I'm super excited that I have these intelligent set of listeners that are thoughtful, and they send me these wonderful emails. So I thought I'd just read a couple, and we can go over some of the issues that they bring out and find solutions or answer questions live on this show, and hopefully it'll benefit a lot of people. So thank you again for sending me those emails, and keep sending them here, and we'll try to address them as best as we can and as fast as we can. So I'll read these emails out. I won't share the last names and any other personally identifiable information. I'll just share the first name. So to respect your privacy, if you send me your emails, they are not going to be shared with anybody else. But if they have useful content or questions that other people can benefit from, then I think it behooves me to share it with people. But I want to respect your privacy. So here goes the first email. It was sent by Zach. Zach says, "Hi Arsalan, I'm loving your podcast and I've signed up for emails. I love those too. I had a couple of suggestions for the podcast. I listened to the manual tester episode and I'd be interested in hearing more from testers, specifically those fluent in and using automation often. Even more than that, I've been seeing more jobs for something called DevOps, which could make for an interesting episode. It seems like that's a hybrid career where someone develops a bit, but is more responsible to make the company's infrastructure work to deliver solutions for the company's products." After that, Zach talks about a friend of his who is in the military along with Zach. Zach's also in the military. And he thinks it would be good for me to interview him. For privacy concerns and privacy reasons, I'm not going to share the name right here. But I appreciate that he thought about his friend and thought about how he could benefit and we could benefit from having him on the show. I really appreciate it. And if you're listening to this episode right now, you want to recommend somebody who would be a good guest for this show, please do that. I really, really appreciate it. So Zach's in the military along with his friend, and they're looking to start a career after they get out of the military. And I can imagine how hard it must be for somebody in their position, because they have a very serious job. When they get out, they need to sort of restart their life and restart their career. Computer science, software development could be a very good career, but it's not for everybody. There are a lot of things that we can do in the software development industry as a whole, or computer software industry, if you want to call it that, that is not pure software development or is not pure programming. Programming is a part of the whole software development thing, right? If you're building a piece of software, if your company makes accounting software, you need people to write the code, but you need so much more than that. You need people to understand what needs to be made. Those would typically be called business analysts. Then you need to test the code or test the final software product. And those would be the testers, which could be manual testers, automated testers, and performance testers, load testers, so many different kinds of testing that need to be done depending on the size of your application, your user base. There are so many factors. But also, there are people who put your code or put your software product up on a server or package it up in a way that people can use it. Then there are people who make sure that your software product keeps working at all times. If it's a 24/7 web product, then you may need support people who make sure that the product is running as expected. And if there are problems, they can resolve it. If they cannot resolve it, they escalate the problem or call somebody who knows more, essentially. And there's different levels that can happen. Again, it depends on the size and the complexity of your application. And there is this thing, this hybrid role that has evolved in recent times. It's called DevOps. DevOps. What do you think it means? Dev, software developer, probably. Ops, operations. It's an interesting concept, and we're going to talk about it in this episode. Thank you, Zach, for sending me this wonderful and thoughtful email. You mentioned that you liked the software testing episode. That was episode 42 with Jennifer Cable. You can listen to it at mentoringdevelopers.com/episode42. That was a wonderful episode because we talked about something that doesn't get talked about much. The importance of software testing. What is software testing? And what do you do if you want to be a software tester? Is that a worthwhile career and all that good stuff? So check it out. I also want to mention that quite often, a lot of people who are doing software development or programming right now started off as software testers. So it's a completely valid path to a development career, or it can be a very good career in its own right. You also mentioned DevOps, and that's a very interesting new development in the world of software, computer software, IT. And we need to define what it is. I'm going to say that DevOps does not have a universal definition. There is no single way of understanding this concept of DevOps, but if you Google it, you'll have a couple of different ways of looking at it. You'll find Wikipedia, which will say that DevOps is a culture, movement, or practice that emphasizes the collaboration and communication of both software developers and other information technology professionals while automating the process of software, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of words, but what is it exactly? The point is, software development as a discipline in its own, which you can consider programming and related activities, that's something that helps you develop a piece of software. You write a piece of code, you write some tests, you write some code in a programming language, and you package it up in that software development. But what happens after this piece of code is developed? If it's a web application, it needs to be deployed to a web server. It needs to be configured on the web server to run appropriately. Perhaps you need to do some tweaking on the web server side or the application server side to make it perform better. Maybe you need to scale it. Maybe you're going from 10 users a month to 100 to 100,000 in a matter of a few months, and you need to be able to support all these scenarios without your application buckling down under this pressure. So you might need to do some load testing to make sure that it works, or you might just need to be able to scale it on the fly, like in the Amazon cloud or some other cloud infrastructure. These are a lot of decisions that a person needs to make or a team needs to make, and they need to make this application work for its users under all circumstances, at least try to. So those types of activities can probably be called ops because they're not really development the way we think about development. And if you have a job where you get to do some of this and some of that, maybe that's a good place to start when we start thinking about DevOps. So let's keep searching for a better definition as defined by the internets. So Agile Admin, the agileadmin.com. It says, DevOps is a term for a group of concepts that, while not all new, have catalyzed into a movement and are rapidly spreading throughout the technical community like a disease. So, like any new and popular term, people have somewhat confused and sometimes contradictory impressions of what it is. Here's my take, which is the Agile Admin's take on how DevOps can be used, can be usefully defined. So he says, I propose this definition as a standard framework to more clearly discuss the various issues DevOps covers, like quality, Agile. DevOps is a large enough concept that it requires some nuance. Okay. So it is a difficult concept. I get it, the Agile Admin. What does it say? It says, DevOps is a new term emerging from the collision of two major related trends. The first was also called Agile System Administration or Agile Operations. And I think it gives a whole history. I really don't want to know the history. I want to go into the definition, what it is. What is DevOps? Okay, so there's a section on definition in depth. It says DevOps means a lot of different things. So, okay, I know that. Just get to the point. I think that is just a whole, like a huge article on just setting up what DevOps is supposed to be. So I think I'm trying to get to the gist of it. And I think this could be a useful section here. It says, what is DevOps not? So it's not NoOps. Okay, so NoOp is maybe an insider joke here. NoOp is an instruction that is usually in a hardware platform like a CPU. If you have an Intel processor, it has instructions that it can carry out. One of them is NoOp, which means do nothing. So wait. And I think that's kind of an insider industry joke. When you're doing nothing, you're doing a no-op. Okay, it's not just tools. It's not just culture. It's not just devs and ops. Okay, that's interesting. Some people have complained, what about security? What about network administrator? Why leave us out? So all of that, he's saying it's not just development. It's not just ops. And ops, I think he means just setting up and running the web application. Maybe you should include network security, maybe administration of the network, all of that. And I think we understand that all of that is considered the operation of the website. So if you have a website, you build it in Ruby on Rails, for instance, you deploy it on Heroku, great. So now you tested it. Now you want to do maybe a different type of deployment on a large web server, maybe a server farm with multiple servers and another sort of head server that acts like a load balancer. If you want to do that, then you might need to tweak some things here and there to make it work. You may need to work on a caching system that makes your application load up faster because it doesn't have to go through the process again because it's hasn't changed. If your output hasn't changed, you can just store that information and load it up faster. That would be caching, could be security, could be networks. There's so many different things that go into running a really successful and production-ready application. Essentially, if you're running any serious application where you have a lot of users, they are serious users that are paying you money, obviously, and they need this website up and running at all times and errors to be handled gracefully, and because they're doing something critical and they're paying you for it, so that would be a fair expectation. Then in that case, you probably have to spend a whole lot of time worrying about getting the website up and running, or if it's even if it's a desktop software, it needs to make some kind of connection to the server to update itself, then you'll still have those concerns. And those would be, I would say 80% of your effort would go into maintaining and running that application, and 20% would be to develop this application. So it's very, very important. And a lot of companies are, at this point in time, they realize that they do have to spend all this time in running it. And sometimes they need to ramp up their resource pool of the number of people that are working to deploy an application. Maybe it's a release point. Maybe every quarter they release a big version and they need a lot of people, a lot of hands on deck to make sure that it goes without a hitch and any problems are solved as they come. But after that, a couple of weeks after that, they don't really need it anymore. So then you can have a person who is comfortable setting up servers and maintaining servers and is not scared of that, but also has skills in software development and wants to, it's like one foot in each camp. And when it's time to release your application, everybody just stops developing and they just jump on this ops bandwagon and they're just help the application get released and make it work. If there is another emergency, something goes down, people can just get in and do the work. And when that crisis is over, they can go back to developing features and fixing bugs and all of that other stuff. So I think that's the idea behind DevOps. That's my definition. But let's keep looking to see what the internet has to offer. So here's an interesting article by Patrick Dubois at Jedi.b. He talks about what DevOps is and so on, but I found this section interesting. It's titled, How Does DevOps Help? He says, the DevOps movement is built around a group of people who believe that the application of a combination of appropriate technology and attitude can revolutionize the world of software development and delivery. Okay, so essentially he says the demographic seems to be experienced. So if you're very experienced, you might really know more than just development, and you might be able to help with the infrastructure and help keep the application running and help it running well, right? Perform better. I think this is kind of where we've been headed in our discovery of what DevOps means. But he also talks about some of the criticisms of the movement. Some people have been a little suspicious. He says the movement really looks a lot like just a bunch of European sysadmins, many of whom know each other. Is this just an elitist club or some kind of rebranding exercise? And he says that is true. DevOps as a movement is characterized by a number of sysadmins, many of whom know each other, but that isn't a surprise. So essentially what he's saying is that DevOps person, or the movement of DevOps, is essentially there are system administrators who know how to run your system, who know how to configure your system. So essentially the operations people, but they do a little bit of development. He says that it's an attitude, it's a state of mind, and you need to be a certain type of person to do it. But I think the thrust of his explanation and his definition is that this is something for really serious and really experienced developers or system administrators who add some development chops to their skills and add to their value to the organization by just doing both sides. But according to this definition, you really need to be experienced. And the audience, you guys, may or may not have that kind of experience. So if you're starting out, if you want to be a software developer, or if you want to be in this industry and you're thinking, hey, how about DevOps? Can I be a DevOps engineer? I think based on this definition, it looks like this may not be the right field for you to get into. unless you have some experience behind you, especially for the system administrator part of it, the ops part. And I'm also looking at different solutions, different products that sort of claim that they help with your transition to DevOps. And one of them is Chef. It says DevOps is a cultural and professional movement focused on how we build and operate high-velocity organizations born from the experiences of its practitioners. Again, the emphasis on experiences. And obviously, since they are promoting their tool, they say Chef is your path to DevOps. Your mileage may vary, and you might have different experiences from different tools, but that's an interesting idea. If you find a concept being adopted by a tool and being used for its marketing, that's a sign that there is demand, because they would have done their market research. So there is demand, and to fulfill that demand, they have come up with very targeted branding towards people who are interested in DevOps. So certainly something you should look at. Zach, if you're listening, and anybody else out there who's really interested in exploring DevOps, I encourage you to do that. If you have any questions or comments, send it to me via email. You can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. You can tweet at me @mentoringdevs. And you can also sign up to my mailing list, where you can get my emails directly, special emails that are, I think, very useful based on the responses I've gotten. So if you're interested, go check out mentoringdevelopers.com/list. And yeah, check out DevOps. I think it's a good concept to know, at least. I am skeptical about its efficacy and about its usefulness for new and aspiring developers. But if you have a couple of years of system administration done, or if you're very comfortable around maintaining and running servers, if that excites you, I think you should look into that. Let's move on to the second email that I wanted to share with you. This is sent to me by Elizabeth. Again, I will withhold the last name and any other personally identifiable information, because I want to respect your privacy, Elizabeth. And if you are listening to this podcast right now and you have a question that you want to ask, or you want to share a story that about something that happened to you, or you want to send out a message, a shout out to something that someone or some organization, go ahead and send me an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com, and I'll try to include your message and your email in the post. You can also go to mentoringdevelopers.com, any page on that website, any episode or the main page, and you'd see a banner type thing on the right hand side where you can actually record your voicemail that'll come directly to me. So that's a pretty cool way of interacting. And if you recorded a voicemail, then definitely the chance of it being included in a future episode are pretty high. So Elizabeth writes, "Thank you, Arsalan, and thanks very much for the great quality content you're putting out there." Thanks, Elizabeth. I really appreciate you saying those things. "I've learned many things," she continues, "I've learned many things from you already and look forward to reading more. I do have a question, if you could share your thoughts with me on this. I'm finishing up a boot camp focused on the LAMP stack development right now. I have a background in several things, mainframe programming, librarianship for a few years, and I also have a few years of web development in ASP.NET and C#, but I did not do a lot of development. It was mostly outsourced." So that could be positive or negative. If you had to deal with a lot of foreign developers that were working as developers, and probably or maybe you got to manage them, that could be considered a positive, where you got to work at a higher capacity, and that may be a pretty good thing on your resume, Elizabeth. But if your job was outsourced and that's what you really wanted to do, and you did not get a promotion or you did not manage these people that were outsourced developers, then yeah, I think I can understand if you think it kind of sucks, and it does. All right, let's keep reading Elizabeth's email. She says that she doesn't feel very comfortable with it. I think it probably means ASP.NET and C# development. So she asks me, would you recommend me leaving that off of my resume, or is there some way to include my light exposure to it? Again, I think it means ASP.NET, without inviting a lot of questions about it. That is a very interesting question, and I think the answer is going to have to be nuanced, because there's no obvious yes or no answer here. If I wanted to generalize that question, I'm going to say it boils down to this. If you have some experience in anything that you have worked on in the past, if you have some experience, but you don't think that experience is that good, the quality of that experience is not that good, and if you get drilled on that particular set of technologies or activities that you did, if you get grilled on it during an interview, you're not that confident of being able to answer it. Maybe you're feeling a little bit guilty because you think, well, I didn't really do much. Even though I worked in that capacity, I didn't do as much as I would expect myself to do. So then what do I do? Do I add that to my resume? Do I skip it? And, you know, what's going to happen if I skip it? Or what's going to happen if I add it? The first thing that I would recommend is to take a step back and look at what you have done, Elizabeth. What have you done, and write it down? What are the activities you actually performed? And then maybe on another piece of paper, write down the technologies and the activities that you performed. So essentially bullet points on your resume. What are the possible, what is the universe of possible bullet points that you can write down for that job or that particular set of activities or those technologies? Once you have that down, then I think it will be clear to you if there's anything worthwhile that you did. If you are a ASP.NET C# developer, if that was your title, and you actually never did any coding yourself, and all you did was review code that was created by somebody else, maybe in the outsourced person did it, and all you did was just look over it, that's something valuable. Reviewing code is valuable. If you did maybe 10% of the coding and 90% was done by somebody else, okay, you did 10% of the coding. That can be valuable. It depends on what you did. If you focus on the activity that you performed and just think about that, is that valuable in its own right? A potential employer is looking to see, do you know how to make a program or to make software? Everybody understands that if you are working in a team, that you're not going to do everything. But the part that you did, do you know what you did there? Were you confident? Were you able to look at a problem, conceive a solution, and finish it? Sure, if you're starting out, you would need a lot of help, and maybe you needed help every day. But at the end of the day, did you take responsibility? Did you finish it? And if you did, I think that's valuable. What I would caution you against would be to devalue your own activities and your own accomplishments. Imposter syndrome, unfortunately, it's a condition where you don't value your own accomplishments, and perhaps others do, and you don't. that can be really detrimental for your career. Imposter syndrome is a very, very natural feeling, but you shouldn't let that hold you back. And it's entirely possible that you actually didn't do anything worthwhile, and it's just that you did some other things that may also be valuable, but not ASP.NET or C# programming. Maybe that's not your skill set. But I don't know that because I don't know enough information. You didn't tell me everything that you did, but I can tell you that if you write it down in a piece of paper, everything that you did and all the technologies you used and the ways that you used and the people that you managed and the value that you provided to the company, and that is critical. Ultimately, nobody really cares if you can write a for loop efficiently. Well, some people do. They don't really know if you can write in a particular programming language, because the fact is, and everybody understands, that programming languages are easy to learn. Ultimately, over time, over years, it doesn't really matter. If I hire you for an ASP.NET or C# job, and I expect you to be there for 2, 3, 4 years, then I don't really care whether you know it already. What I want to know is, can you do it? Do you have the skill, the experience, or the aptitude and the work ethic to be able to do it? And that you can prove by several different means. But at the same time, I don't want to say that anybody can do whatever they want. There are limits to what we can achieve, and we need to know our limits and thrive within our limits. And the only way to do that is to evaluate yourself, write down on a piece of paper. I think writing down on pieces of paper is just so much better than typing it up in Google Docs or Word document, because I think it's just so much better. You can freeform it and you can draw things, you can draw circles. It's just easier and also more focused, and you're not getting distracted by everything else that's going on. The technology is not really in your way. Use a pen and paper if you want to take my advice. So the bottom line, can you add it to your resume? Yes. Write it down on a piece of paper, all the things that you did, and if it is providing value to the company at the end of the day, if it makes the company money or solves a problem that didn't exist or makes something more efficient than it was, it adds some value to the company. Absolutely add it. And then once you have thought it through, like exactly how you help the company, then when they ask you a question, you can take that answer towards the value addition that you perform. Take it away from your weakness towards your strength. And if your strength is that you actually saved the company money, or you helped a colleague finish the task, maybe you cut down bugs or errors, whatever you did that solved the problem or added value to the company, that is ultimately what people are looking for. And if you can just take the answer, don't evade the question, but take it towards your strength by mentioning it. If you mention it, they'll probably ask you follow-up questions on that. So that's what I'm going to say. And if you don't feel confident, if you feel like, well, I didn't really actually do anything valuable, and you've done the pen and paper exercise I told you about, then yeah, don't include that, because you only want to mention your strengths. And certainly people have failed. Like if you worked on 10 different projects in the past, it's possible that 2 or 3 of them failed. But there is no rule that you have to mention those projects. You don't have to mention your failures. A resume is intended, the intention of a resume is to highlight your successes, not your failures. You also mentioned that you're scared of inviting a lot of questions about things that you put on your resume. You know, what I would say to you, flip that mentality or the way of thinking and look to invite questions. This is how you can steer the direction of the interview towards a favorable ending or favorable response for you. You want to invite questions. That's exactly what the interview is for, as far as you're concerned. You want them to think in the way that leads towards your strength. And the only way to do that is to talk about things that you're strong in, right? So if you worked in ASP.NET and C#, but you didn't actually do a lot of the coding, but let's say that you managed a couple of people, then highlight the fact that you managed it. Maybe you managed them in a way that ended the project faster, delivered on time, maybe saved the company money by doing something. Maybe you tested the software and you found critical bugs that saved the company money or time or resources. Several different ways of slicing it, but you should mention your accomplishments in a way that lead to further follow-up questions, then you can answer them confidently. And I think that's, once you do that a couple of times, it'll become really obvious to you how you want to handle that. But certainly always look to create content or to add your bullet points to your resume that invite further questions. Questions are great. If you are going to an interview and you want a job, you want people to ask questions. And you want them to ask the questions that you know you can answer really well and that proves to that person that's sitting in front of you that you bring tremendous value to any organization that you're part of. All right, let's keep reading Elizabeth's email. She says she's also wondering if she should spend... Let me just read it. It says... Also wondering if I should spend some time brushing up now that I've gone through the boot camp and I'm a lot more versed in basic programming techniques. Or should I just spend more time improving my knowledge of JavaScript and PHP MySQL so I will feel more comfortable interviewing for jobs focused on that? Okay, so she went through a boot camp. And if you don't know what a boot camp is, this is a course that people do usually that lasts 2 to 3 to 4 months, and that it's essentially a way for somebody to get a jump start in a software development career. You certainly are not going to get a very deep experience, but you should learn enough of the systems, and you should have the confidence and the ability to say, I can get started in this field even without any prior experience or any computer science degree. So that could be a pretty valuable experience for somebody. However, I'm going to tell you that it can't possibly be easy. No matter what kind of boot camp you go to, at the end of it, you still don't have the depth of experience. So you're going to struggle a little bit to get your first job. Or even if you do get it, you're going to struggle in your first job while you're working in it. And that's okay. You just need to hang in there for 6 months to a year until you get comfortable. After a year or two of working in your first job, let's hope that you get in a good company. Don't worry too much about the money. Don't worry too much about the perks. Just worry about being in the company of great developers, empathetic developers, people who enjoy working with juniors and who like to mentor. If you do that, I think you're going to come away with a really good chance of success. And I would say then after a year or two, then you could potentially double your salary. It's not unheard of. It happens, especially if you have proven yourself a little bit. And so 2 years is a very long time if you work at a fast-paced company and you work with good people. It's a very good time to get recommendations. It's enough time to work on a few different types of projects and set yourself up. And if you want to be a DevOps engineer, 2 years, I think, is a sweet spot. 2 years of working, doing a whole lot of different things, and then maybe that sets you up to be a DevOp later on. So here's Elizabeth's real dilemma in this question. She can either spend a lot of time learning the fundamentals of software development, programming, and so on, or she can focus on one very highly focused set of technologies that she knows that there are jobs for instance, JavaScript, and PHP MySQL. These are the two sets of technologies she mentions. But it's a lot more involved than that, right? I think you can probably get it from the way I'm describing it. JavaScript is not one thing. You could spend years and years trying to master JavaScript, and you can still spend a lot of time trying to master PHP, MySQL. However, I understand why you would want to learn a very specific technology stack, because let's face it, that's where the jobs are. So that's an interesting dilemma. Let's see if we can figure out a good solution for Elizabeth. I think as a general principle, you always want to continue improving and learning. This is, I think, the most important part of being a software developer, a modern software developer anyway, that you always want to, you're seeking knowledge and you're seeking differences of opinions. You are peeking into what other people are doing, maybe in different stacks, maybe in different geographical areas, maybe in other technologies that you've never heard of. You always want to see what's going on there. You also want to learn some fundamentals of software development. You always want to keep learning. Maybe you go back and you learn some of the algorithms that you had come across during your boot camp, or if you went to a computer science program, you're going to forget things. So it's always good to just, keep doing that. Maybe you don't need to actually code these basics and to actually spend hours and hours recoding things, but you should probably have some reference books. I'm going to say that if you're interested in computer science as a field, and if you're interested in algorithms, maybe you should have a book on algorithms just handy in your bookshelf just when you need it. These days, it's not that important. It's not as necessary to have books in your bookshelf because you can always look things up. A lot of knowledge is now available in blogs. A lot of books are online also. So it's possible that you don't need a collection of technology books, but I think it always helps to have something offline. Maybe some light reading. If you have some time away from the computer, let's see what is this whole quicksort thing all about. Let's read that. It's probably a good idea. You could also learn about software development as a discipline. What is a software development life cycle? What it means? What are the different options? What's agile? What is an agile methodology? What does it mean to build software iteratively? Why do we do that? You can also learn about some of the basics of computer networking. These are really good concepts to review sometimes and spend a little bit of time on and off on how the web really works and whatever is your interest. Just, I think it's a good idea in general. Having said that, if that's all you do and all of your time is spent learning the fundamentals and learning the basics, then you're not going to be that valuable to any organization. Because what we really want as an industry are people who can build our solutions for us. And you can't do that with theory. So what you need to do is learn a specific set of skills. You might need to be really good at a programming language, but a lot of times we work in frameworks. So a programming language is not that critical or not that valuable on its own. In some cases, you might learn a programming language that is used in scripting, such as Perl, or Python, or Ruby, and you might be able to get away with just knowing that language, and there's certainly merit to that. But in general, and especially in software development, you're going to need to learn a framework. A framework will have a preference or a requirement for a programming language, but you don't use the full gamut of all the possibilities that exist in a programming language. You use a subset that needs you to accomplish or that help you to accomplish that goal. So if you're interested in web development and you're comfortable with the Python programming language, you might say, well, I want to build web applications, so maybe I should learn the Django framework and I can use a Python programming language with the Django framework to build websites. Now, if you have that skill set, then you go out on the internet and you go to websites, job sites, or you can go to Stack Overflow Careers and look for jobs. You're going to find a lot of jobs, a lot of people looking for people with that skill set. So that makes you really valuable. Once you have a very targeted set of skills, maybe even a subset of Django, and you're very good at one thing in Django, I'm using Django as an example, then it makes you really valuable to the company or that person that needs that very specific skill set. Having said that, there are a lot more jobs in other fields and other technologies that need something that's a little bit different from what you know. So there are two sides of the story. It will limit your appeal, certainly to a subset of all the possible jobs. However, if you find a match, then they really, really would want to hire you. So that your chance of success are really high if you're targeted. Also, one other benefit you can get is you can probably ask for a higher salary and you are likely to get it. If you have skills that match exactly what they need, and usually it's very targeted. So you can say you are an expert in, let's say, PHP performance improvement over MySQL, right? You can become the MySQL expert, relative expert. You're not going to be the absolute expert, but you're really good at improving MySQL performance for PHP websites. If you do that, and that's the title of your resume, and that's on your LinkedIn profile, if there's somebody out there that's looking for that skill, you're going to be very high in their list. And they're going to court you, they're going to pamper you, and they're probably going to offer you a much higher salary than they would for a generic PHP MySQL programmer. Also, you talk about improving your knowledge of JavaScript, PHP, MySQL, and so on. So, what do you mean by knowledge? You should definitely know the concepts. You should know the features. It's really important for you to know. But what's equally important is for you to have done things and built things using these technologies. Ultimately, that's what's going to get people's attention. So maybe it's a website that you're thinking of that you want to build, and you can build a prototype in your language of choice, your platform of choice, and then that becomes part of your resume. And don't shy away from including your personal projects in resumes. They work really well. In fact, if it's a personal project, if I am you, I would like to add a section for personal projects and add all of my personal projects that I want to talk about. And people invariably, the interviewers are going to go to your personal projects because they want to see that you're personally committed to learning and growing your skills. If you don't have any personal projects, they might say, well, this guy does or this girl does whatever they're told. They're not that passionate and they're not going to have that level of confidence in you. But let's say that you're doing something completely unrelated. You are a librarian, but you have 3 or 4 projects that you have done in your nights and weekends that you haven't finished. You don't have to have fully baked in solutions, but you have built prototypes that are online. Perhaps people can go online and look at them. Everything is not baked in, but the general idea is there, and you've started and finished projects in those areas and using those skills. What do you think is going to happen when somebody sees that resume versus, you know, thousands of resumes that don't have that? You're going to stand out. Not only you're going to stand out, but you're going to become desirable. And even if you don't have any real world professional experience, you're still going to be more appealing to a lot of people who are looking for developers right now, because all we're really looking for is the passion. We know the technologies are not that hard to teach, especially a lot of big technology firms or a lot of good startup companies have their own infrastructure. Sometimes they have their own frameworks and they don't use the generic open source frameworks that a lot of people use. They have their own custom things. So they know whoever comes into their company will have to learn that. So might as well be somebody who is brand new, and then you don't have to unlearn any of the quote-unquote bad habits that you may have acquired over the years. So you might actually be an attractive hire for them, but you have to show your passion, and you can do that by doing these projects. Learn the concepts, blog about it. If you have a blog and you're learning, write articles and be out there so that when people search for you, that they will see these blogs and they'll be like, wow, this person is really committed. And then you've done these projects. So not only that you're committed, you have the passion and you have the drive to finish things that you start. Those are all really, really positive things. Also, you can, you know, feel free to come on my show. I'll give you some free publicity and you can use the transcript or you can use the web, you know, the link for the episode that you're on, and that will show that you're committed. So come on and be part of the show. You can go to mentoringdevelopers.com/join, and that way you can tell me what you like and maybe we'll have you on the show, and that will be a really good career booster for you. I really believe that. So the last part of Elizabeth's email, she says, I have always been very nervous about interviewing and I'm not really sure how to approach the next phase of my career. Thanks for any advice you have in this area, and thanks again for the helpful information you share in your podcasts. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. It means a lot for me to read emails from my listeners and to know that, well, people are listening, that's good, and it's helping them, and it's changing lives. I think we need to start communicating with each other. As an industry, we need a dialogue between people coming into the industry and people who have been in the industry for a long time. We need empathy and we need to work together to create this environment where people can come in and just fit right in. And the only way to do that is for us, the hiring side of the equation, for us to be flexible to your needs, to the way you are, instead of you adopting instead of you adapting to the industry should adapt to you. So that's my thought for the day. I think I will be thrilled to hear from Elizabeth again to see if my advice helped her. I would be thrilled to hear from any of the other people that are listening right now. Send me your emails, us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Let me know what you think. Let me know how I can help you. And sign up for my email list at mentoringdevelopers.com/list. And then when you get my email, just hit reply and I will get them and I will reply them. And a lot of times I will include them in my podcast. Finally, I think interviewing is so important. It is so important to do them right. When you are interviewing for a job, remember that you are interviewing the company just as much as the company is interviewing you. You should value your craft and what you bring to the table. If you think you don't bring much to the table, then make yourself valuable first. Hey, don't stop interviewing. No, I'm not saying stop interviewing while you make yourself valuable. While you are at your current job or you're a student, whatever you're doing, make yourself worthwhile. Make people want to talk to you. Make people want to hire you. And a lot of times, it's just the way you position yourself. And a lot of times, you just need to tweak what you're doing in your day-to-day life. Get recommendations, testimonials from people. Get your bosses, your managers, your peers to agree to be references for you. And wow people with your dedication, with your hard work. you don't have to be the smartest people and the smartest person in the world to succeed. You just have to be the person who really wants it. You have to want it. And if you want it, there is a very, very good chance that you will get it. And I will be the happiest person in the world if I know that by listening to this podcast, you get inspired to position yourself better, interview with confidence, and get a job. If you did get a job recently, let me know. I really want to hear from you and want to know in what other ways I can help you. Interviewing is so important. I think I'm going to talk about this more in this podcast when I get a chance. And I'm really thinking that I should really write an email for the people in my email list on some interviewing tips and tricks that I use personally. And I've been very successful in interviews. And some of my ideas, I think you're going to really enjoy learning about how to position yourself, how to be the person in charge of the interview. And you'll find that you'll end up asking more questions than answering. And that's when you know you've got the situation under control. And it's just a great feeling. So Elizabeth and everybody else that has been emailing me and talking to me and supporting me, I really appreciate it. If you're out there and you want to talk to me and you want to get some advice from me, go ahead and email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. And I guess I will wrap up this episode. In the next episode, I will try to have more interesting content, probably more guests, and we're going to have more discussion panels. I apologize that this podcast has been kind of off and on a little bit. Sometimes there is a gap of a week or two in between episodes that more than what you expect. This is still a weekly podcast, technically. The life comes in the way sometimes. And I apologize for the on and off situation. But hopefully in a couple of months, things will settle down and I will resume the weekly schedule. I'll still try it. But I think you understand that there are other things in life and priorities sometimes have to be adjusted. However, I'm really committed to this podcast and I'm really, really enjoying doing it. And I'm really excited about the upcoming episodes and the mailing list that I've going on. I think it's been going great. People are responding and it's really helping people. So currently I'm doing this 5 steps to becoming successful. I was trying to remember. So five steps to become successful as a developer. This is an email course. That's five emails with one step each. I think it's really valuable. I talk about some of my life stories and I give you, you know, just really honest, straightforward advice, no ads. This is just something that should benefit you. And then, as I said earlier, I'm going to write more about how to get a job, how to be a really good interviewer, and anything else you want. And go ahead, sign up at mentoringdevelopers.com/list. Hit me with a reply anytime you like, and I'll be there for you. All right, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Talk to you later. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.